is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Lana joining you for the next hour. Well, there's a few things I want to let you know about before I bring on the lovely Cathedral Princess in the UK. If you don't already know, on Saturdays, usually around 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Henrik and I host a live video stream show called Weekend Warrior, where we comment on news, entertainment, events, and anything really. We do release a few excerpts in the TV section of redice.tv and on our YouTube channel, so check it out. But to see the full show, you have to be a member. If you're a member, be sure to log in to redicemembers.com on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time to watch Weekend Warrior live. We'll also be implementing a chat function so members can communicate during the show. Also, many of you know we're broadcasting selected filmed events live, and we have a couple more events coming up this month, so be sure to follow us on Twitter or check out our website for updates, since events creep up fast and we don't always have much advance warning before setting up the live stream. And of course, I keep forgetting to tell you all that we have Red Ice t-shirts available for men and women, which I manufactured via my clothing label, Lana's Llama. The t-shirts are super soft, made of 100% organic cotton, made in the USA by me. You can visit lanaslama.com and enter Red Ice into the search field, or just go to redice.tv and you'll see the t-shirt banner. One last thing, on June 20th, I was on the David Duke show, so visit his archives if you want to download and listen to that. It's always fun talking to Mr. David Duke. Now for Cathedral Princess, who hosts a show called Fash Britannia on TRS. We'll talk about a lot in the next hour, from the new Muslim mayor of London, who banned ads of sexy women on public transport systems, to questioning if women are inherently left-wing. And we talk about the rumor that the alt-right has been infiltrated by homos and woman haters. I slip in a little bit of my thoughts on Milo. We'll end by talking about paganism, which is not LARPing. Kathy, up next. Welcome, Kathy. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I hope you're doing well.
Not too bad. I think I heard you say that you had some Slavic roots. Is that correct?
No. I'm.
Oh, actually, okay.
Jeez. That's okay. I am 100%, as far as I know, Lithuanian, which is Baltic. I came to England actually like 6 years ago to study for my undergraduate degree. Yeah, and I've been here since.
So how did you become the host or co-host of Fash Britannia? How did that come together?
Right. So it was a little bit after Fash the Nation came out that I kind of thought that, well, there should be a British one, like a British podcast, politics podcast as well. And there wasn't one, you know. And at the same time, we had the TRS forums really sort of just starting out. And I kind of, I joined the forums and I was like, well, does anyone want to do this thing with me, you know, this podcast? And yeah, that's basically how it started. We did run into sort of issues later on because of like, you know, Britain and hate speech and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, at the moment we are on a hiatus. I'll see if I'm able to get something back up a bit later on in the year. We'll see how it goes.
Is it one of those things, if you got caught talking about some of the things you talk about, could they actually go after you for hate speech? I mean, how aggressive are they with that?
They are getting more aggressive at the moment. Like, I mean, 6 months ago, I would have said, like, they won't bother. But now with more and more of, you know, with the latest kind of happenings, the assassination of that MP and just other things, you know, with national action becoming more and more sort of having more and more demonstrations and such, it's getting a little bit more so that the establishment is coming after people.
And of course, there was that lie that the killer said Britain first before he killed a woman, and it was total BS, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was complete nonsense. They'll just go to any lengths to like frame you if they even suspect that, you know, there's anything non-kosher about you. Mm-hmm. You might have heard of that the guy who got arrested for like teaching his dog to do the Roman salute.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That's just unreal. I mean, yeah, I just couldn't believe it. I thought that was hilarious. I thought that dog was so cute.
Yeah. And the guy was like some sort of leftist commie anyway, and he was doing it as a joke. But like none of it stops you. I mean, as soon as like the establishment, you know, put that into echoes.
Oh yeah.
As soon as they sort of latch onto you for anything, they'll they'll go after you. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea is like I would like to carry on with Fash Britannia at a later date. However, like I have to consider the balance between actually producing good alt-right content and not being in a position to suffer too much in case anybody doxes me or anything like that.
Yeah.
There's little value in having like a civic nationalist kosher podcast. I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have to weigh up the costs and benefits, and we'll see.
I think there will be a time when people can come out, but some people have to be in the closet for now. It's funny because it's like how commies were in America, right? They had to hide and they had their secret meetings. So it's like we're like the new communists, you know? Jeez.
Yeah, we are in a way. Except it was never. I don't think it was ever as bad for them as it can be.
Oh yeah, I think that they lied too. Exactly, this place is already so infiltrated by the 50s. America anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's his name? McCarthy did nothing wrong. He was completely right about the Hollywood and even the political establishment being infiltrated by communists. I mean, because that it was complete. He was completely right. So.
Yeah. Yes, he was. So tell us how you've seen the UK change, even in the time that you've been there.
Well, it's not. I mean, I've only been there 6 years, so it's kind of been the same. Demographically speaking, I mean, you're getting more and more people coming over. They do kind of. In the media portray like the EU migrants, being the main issue. But to be honest, like over half of the migration into the UK is from non-white countries.
Yeah.
So I did originally when I moved, I lived, the university I went to was in quite a small town. So it was very white and, it was like hardly... It was almost like being back home in that kind of way.
Yeah. I watched this really sad documentary, Last Whites of the East End. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
And then so people were saying, it's so racist. I'm like, these people are literally being pushed out of where they've been for hundreds of years. And you're saying that they're racist for not wanting to be pushed out of where their family has lived for hundreds of years? You know?
Yeah, I know. It's like this true statement is racist.
Yeah, I know.
That's the level of discourse. But yeah, but then I moved to do my PhD to a big city. And over here, it's very vibrant, diverse and enriched. So yeah, I did kind of like, most of my life I lived in a white country and I kind of was ambivalent at best about the racial issues. Like I didn't pay much attention. Like, I was never like a kind of like liberal on the issue, but I just didn't give it much thought and I didn't really, there was never really any reason because I was never exposed to it.
Yeah,
much.
Sure. Yeah, it's like me. I grew up in a very white area, so I had no reason to think about race. So kind of similar for you in the Baltic, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So when I moved over here, and especially after I moved to the city, it's been like, wow, you kind of like, liberals will tell you that, oh, all these people are racist because they're not exposed to the diverse and vibrant peoples of the world. But, it's the other way around. It's I mean, when you get exposed, it's when you start thinking about it, when you start noticing the differences. And, unless you've been completely brainwashed all your life beforehand, you can't help but see the difference. So
yeah, you have to live with them to know what it's all about, and it's just like... It's totally understandable if you're forcing people to live with each other and they're so different. Eventually, there's going to be some people that hate each other. It's not just some irrational fear that comes out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, the whole idea is like diversity and proximity is conflict. It's just the way it's always been and the way it always will be. But
now, have you thought about going back to Lithuania or how are the Baltic countries? I know they're kind of being forced to open up and diversify, right?
Yeah, the EU is kind of trying to push like the refugees on them and things like that. It's been going slowly. I don't think that there'll be much enrichment and diversification, to be honest, because there's not much gibs there, yeah. you know, for them to have. So they'll just, even if like they get sent over there, they'll just leave at the earliest possibility.
Yeah, I've thought about checking out some of the Baltic or Eastern European places that people would say are kind of second world, I guess, kind of in between, yeah. because they don't have the welfare system. So you can guarantee that it will remain European, which is yeah. kind of smart.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, ultimately my aim is to go home. That it's kind of, I'm working towards that by like getting more qualifications so that I can work in certain sectors over there, you know, and have a good life for me and my family. So yeah.
Now, you probably get this question a lot, but what's your take on Brexit? What's going to happen? I mean, either way.
Oh, well, it's quite close at the moment with the polls. The Leave side kind of surged ahead in the last couple of weeks, and then there was that assassination, you know, the false flag probably.
Yeah.
yeah. And then and now it's kind of it's still a little bit ahead, but kind of remain catching up. Oh, I don't know. It's very exciting. Like, it's a couple of days away now, and I mean, I'm all for Britain leaving the EU. I think it's the best thing for the country. In the long run, you know, even if like it means less gibs for like Eastern European countries in the EU, but like that's probably a good thing in the end yeah. as well. So I'm really hoping that they vote to leave. I at the moment, like, I would not put money either way on what the outcome was going to be. But it's gonna come out quite soon.
I wonder if, you know, if they vote to leave, if anything's gonna change, or they're just gonna continue overriding and it's gonna be business as usual. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, like, I think that, you know, my main problem with the Leave campaign, sorry, is them saying that, oh look, these people are. You know, we're letting the EU people in, but we're not letting in the, you know, the people from the Anglosphere, from the Commonwealth, you know, and that's code for like brown people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, that's the main concern, to be honest, with what the Leave side are saying, that, you know, we don't want to close the, we don't want to close the gates to third world immigration. We want to open it up, you know, which isn't ideal, but I think that's, I mean, you can go tinfoil about this and you can say, oh, you know, the EU will never let Britain leave. You know, they'll think of something, you know, they'll have this vote. And if people vote to leave, there'll be another renegotiation and they'll kind of like remain in nominally, or they'll have this sort of relationship that they might as well be in the EU, like Norway or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there are many different, you know, kind of ways that this could go. And it's really hard to say at the moment, like what is going to be. You know, I'm kind of like on the optimistic side, I guess. I think that, you know, there'll be a change of government if people do vote to leave, you know, the current prime minister.
Wouldn't it be great if Britain exits and then Trump wins? That could actually set a precedent for some cool things to start happening, possibly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, more so than Britain exiting, like Trump's victory in November, it would be a massive sea change, because everything that happens in America, there are ripples across the world. And it will, you know, it will really reinvigorate like the populist right in Europe, which is, you know, the only people fighting back against all this pos that's going on at the moment. But yeah, with Brexit as well, like if Britain leaves the EU, that will it will help other Eurosceptic movements in the EU at the moment. Like Finland is quite Eurosceptic, as is the Netherlands. So yeah, we might be seeing more countries sort of moving towards leaving as well, which would be good.
Well, I also wanted to ask you about the new Muslim mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who I remember when he first came into office, he actually went and thanked the Jewish community for some reason. But anyway, one of the first moves he makes is to, you know, ban ads of basically sexy women on public transport systems. And I know there was a lot of white, ugly feminists that were helping push this, but it's like one step closer to the burqa. But did you hear about this? What did you think about it?
Yeah. I mean, it's creeping Sharia, isn't it? Mm-hmm. In a way. And it's funny how it's just another example of how feminism and Islamism is like one and the same thing, because you have these, you know, ugly fat cat lady feminists going, oh, you know, this is great because, you know, body shaming and you don't want that. And we don't want to see like attractive women on our advertising. You know, we only want like, you know, body positive fat whales.
Well, and it's funny, like, in the ad that they show, you know, are you beach body ready? We did a video about this recently, real quick, in our live show. They're saying, you know, this is encouraging women to conform to unrealistic or unhealthy body shapes. I mean, she's healthy. She's thin. She's not too skin, you know, too skinny. She has like a perfect body. I mean, it's like, don't you want women to have that ideal, that healthy, beautiful ideal, right?
Well, no, because any sort of aspiration towards a objective beauty standard is wrong and bad and very and basically leads to gas chambers, don't you?
I think, too, they just want to have white people be ugly. You know, they just want to make us fat and ugly and lazy and encourage us to be that, almost out of spite of like some kind of envy or something, you know?
Well, yeah, I know that's an interesting point, because you can think about like trying to achieve a certain look as kind of like having a goal that you're working towards. And, you know, and you could say that the powers that be don't want anyone to be too focused on a goal, because it kind of, you know, might prevent you from like filling your body with rubbish and, you know, lying on the sofa and just watching Talmud Vision all day.
So. Yeah. And the other thing I noticed too, he was talking about Mr. Khan, you know, and he, by the way, he said that he doesn't like his daughters riding bikes around London. And I'm like, is that, that kind of reminded me of in Israel, some rabbis were banning, what was it, girls under 10 from riding bikes because it was too provocative or something.
Yeah,
I was like,
oh my God.
Whoa, you guys have dirty minds if that's what you think when you see a girl riding a bike, you know. But he said that he wanted to get rid of advertising, which is demeaning people, you know, and making them ashamed of their bodies. So girls, they, when they walk by, they don't feel uncomfortable about it. And it's just like, come on, you know, get a self-esteem. If I see another beautiful woman, so what? Yeah, she's beautiful. Great. You know, like,
yeah.
But now these people are like, oh my God, she's beautiful and her body's perfect. I can't see it. Take it away. They're going to be like, just kill her or destroy her because she makes me uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, you know, encouraging people's fragility instead of, you know, saying, look, yeah, this is, you know, this woman is better looking than you. And, you know, but there are things that you could do to maybe move towards that ideal. You know, you could start exercising, you could start eating well, things like that. You know, all these things are achievable. But instead, they're kind of just trying to, you know, clothe people in a feather duvet and just have them safe and protected, you know, have a safe space, have everywhere be a safe space away from anything that could possibly upset anyone.
Yeah, I just see a whole lot of jealousy, you know, basically in our society now. We just prop up the losers, the unhealthy ones, the unsound ones, the crazy ones, and we tear down the beautiful, the smart, the people that we should be propping up in our society, right?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, in many different discussions and debates and TV shows in the UK, you will often hear someone repeat the cliche of, oh, society is judged by how it treats its weakest. Well, I mean... Yeah, if you celebrate weakness and you celebrate like the poor and the downtrodden and the miserable and the wretched, then that's what your society is going to be. You know, if that's who you care about,
it's a Statue of Liberty. Ah, shoot, I can't remember the Jewish lady who wrote the saying there. Statue of Liberty. You might remember. You know, give me your tired and your weak and your poor. This is like, that's a great way to start a nation, right?
Just give
me all your losers and outcasts and your sick people.
Yeah. Just give me the refuse of all the different countries and we'll make America great. Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's what's happening here, though. And it's like, they don't let you in unless you have like a lower IQ and you need to go on welfare, you know? I mean, my husband, we went through all the proper channels to get in, you know, get him into America. And it was expensive. It was long. It was hard, you know?
Yeah.
And all these other people just get right in, you know, it's like, how's that fair? God.
Yeah, I know, like the easiest way to like immigrate into America as a white person these days is probably to like jump the border in, you know, from Mexico.
Sorry, babe, got to get a tan, grow out that beard, just say you're from Latin America and then we'll get you in. Yeah, I wonder too about the body shaming adverts. It seemed like it was just about women? So can men be shamed then, or could we have pictures of sexy men, or would that be off the table too? He didn't really say anything about that.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't, did he? I think going back to that a little bit, like it is a far more insidious thing than like the feminists would have you think. Oh, this is all just about like it protecting the feelings of fat chicks or something like that. But no, it's this is a way that, you know, the Muslims use the rhetoric of the left to promote their own agenda, and they, you know, they seem to be really, really good at it. And it's just so terrifying how, you know, the left swallow that, you know, hook, line and sinker. Absolutely. Like they don't even consider that this could be, you know, could have nothing to do with like protecting the fat chick self-esteem. No, it's to do with, you know, Sharia, and to do with, you know, getting women's bodies, getting women out of like the public life and public view.
Exactly. And then they just say things like, well, you know, it's sexist to look good or to show your body because men look at it and it's demeaning. So here, put on a burqa. Okay, great. You know, it's just weird to see them aligning, to be converging, you know. And usually these feminists are, a lot of them are atheists. They hate Christians. They hate pagans. They hate, you know, any of that. But then when it comes to Islam, for some reason, they just love it. So one day they'll be topless, you know, femmes out there on the streets. And then the next day they'll be wearing their, you know, hijab. So basically, in the end, they're just anti-white, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
God. Well, yeah, you also read another article that said, are women inherently left-wing? Maybe you can elaborate more on this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, okay. So I wrote this article originally quite a few years ago now, back for this certain libertarian publication, back when I was like a basic bitch libertarian.
All been there.
Yeah. So I did a bit of research. Like, I looked at voting patterns. I looked at any scientific, more scientific surveys and studies that have been done. And it does turn out that basically women in general, and especially unmarried women, tend to, you know, support government intervention, government programs, gives me that sort of thing. Whereas married women tend to support more sort of conservative economic and social measures. And when you think about it a little bit, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. Like, once a woman is married, you know, she is, you know, traditionally supported by her husband, and she is interested. Her self-interest is to maximize her husband's and her own, you know, the family's income, which, you know, various government programs will only reduce by taxation and things like that. Whereas, you know, unmarried women, and especially single mothers and people like that, they are far more interested in, you know, the government is your husband, basically. So instead of being supported by one man, you're supported by all the men. All the men.
Yeah, exactly.
So your incentives are to vote for increased, you know, government spending, increased taxation and things like that, and various left-wing economic solutions. But also, I think evolutionarily speaking, you could look at it from like a sociobiological point of view. Men are always like the protectors of the tribe. Men are concerned with defending themselves from the other, whereas women tend to, you know, if like an enemy tribe like takes over, and it's kind of like a more successful tribe takes over like a certain tribe, then women will benefit evolutionarily really from mating with the new men of the more successful tribe.
Yeah, women have been war brides, right? They've been married off, and then they have to adapt to those people, right?
Yeah, exactly. So back from then, and here, you know, you will, it seems to have happened, you know, from an evolutionary point of view, that women are far more like inviting and open to in general, not every woman, obviously, but in general, are more open to the other compared to men. So that's, again, that's kind of like a leftist thing. I didn't really discuss that in the article at all. This is something that's really come to light in the recent invasion of Europe. you see like naive young girls being like, oh, refugees welcome, and then they get raped, you know.
Yeah, I know. I wonder what makes that be that way, because you and I, or you strike me this way, is being loyal to your people. Yeah. You know, if I was married off like that, I'd probably try and kill my way out. You know what I mean? I wouldn't just settle. I'm just not that way. And I always wonder, what makes us different? Is it just personality? Is it how we're raised? Or are these other women more susceptible to programming? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, it's a case of Naxalt, isn't it? Where you will have, you know, you have these general traits, but then you have outliers, and I think we just happen to be outliers. You know, that's why we're here doing, like, you know, alternative right shows rather than being leftists. So
yeah, I know. I wonder a lot of times too, you know, if our natural state, well, I would think so, biologically speaking, I know you got into the other aspect of it, but it would be to be more conservative, if you, I hate the word conservative, but more based around biology, which is more about honoring the family unit, just stepping in line with that role. So a lot of times I look around at these women and I think, they're just products of programming. If they're really honest with themselves, a lot of these women, I think, are just really miserable. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I agree with that. Yeah, I think the society, the way it is at the moment, it kind of like encourages the worst excesses of like the feminine sort of empathy and you know, the sort of more leftist tendencies in women. I think you know, whereas normally you would have them, you know, focus on their family, focus on their maybe extended circle, you know, of like the community, you know, the village or whatever. Now you know these women are atomized, so they just focus on like their pets and you know, these third worlders.
Jeez. And I find a lot of these women, they don't even support each other.
No.
You know, that's one thing I appreciate with a lot of the nationalist women. It's like a true sisterhood, you know. They actually have each other's backs, and they think like a tribe, and it's not all catty and, you know, judgy. Yeah. But I find these liberal women can just be total bitches. You know, they don't even support each other.
Oh, yeah. There's absolutely almost no solidarity between them, no matter how much, like, feminists are always pushing the sisterhood. You know, they'll be the first ones to, like, make catty comments about someone's nails or things like that, you know. Oh, that you would never do, like, as a nationalist, because it's just stupid, you know.
Well, there's something I read that I think you had said somewhere in a comment or a show, but you like the one vote per household idea that we originally had. I've talked about this quite a bit too. I'm totally with you there, but what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that would be probably, if we are keeping like a sort of a Republican style democracy as the preferred type of government, which I might I mean, this is a whole different discussion, you know, we could have, but like if you are sticking with that, then one vote per household, and especially like a property owning household, I would qualify that as well, would be the ideal way of going about things, because there you have an economic unit that is interested, that has a stake in society, and yeah, I think that's how it should be. You know, instead of having all these one person one vote sort of things, even though, like, you know, other people might have no stake in society. You know, people who live off welfare, who don't pay tax, you know, they have nothing to lose if there's like a bad if they elect a bad government, you know, whereas people who are productive, they do. So I think that's how it should be limited.
Yeah, I always look at it too. It's like the family unit is like a healthy organism in a society that's part of a larger body, right? It's kind of like based on a evolutionary need, a survival. We have to have the unit. We have to be unified. The house has to be unified. I say this all the time, but I wouldn't be married to my husband if we were voting differently, right? I mean, that would create tension and division in the household. So of course it'd be one vote. It's about having peace, right? Peace within the family and peace within the larger family, which is the society. But now what we've done even back then, you know, a lot of the women that were fighting for their right to vote, a lot of them, sure, some were married, but there was a lot of losers and spinsters and outcasts and, you know, lesbians and stuff. And so, like, we had to change all of society to be able to include them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I think there's been some studies done to say that, you know, the most successful families are ones where the husband and wife have the same political views. I mean, I think that's a given. Like, you have to agree, view the world in the same way. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to work. And yeah, there's always been there's always been a role and a purpose in society for these the women who did not form families, you know, the spinsters, you know, the nuns, etc. There's always been like they've always had a role to play, but now they don't really have that role anymore. They're kind of like they are rootless now. You know, they need to have the duties of like taking care of the elderly parents or taking care of, you know, their nephews and nieces. But now they're just like, what do? They just take care of cats and, spread their poisonous political views.
It's true. Yeah, exactly. There's always going to be those exceptions to the rule and women who don't marry or have a family and whatnot. But now it's like everything has to be catered to them and their bitterness right now, which is, it's a mistake. We should just be like, shut up, go over there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because really, if you're not part of the family unit, your line's not going to be around anymore. So why are you having a say in the future of politics when you don't have any stake in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
So how do we turn around white women to get their heads, you know, screwed back on straight, undoing the damage of all this leftist programming? I always think about this. I'm always trying to come up with ideas. But what are your thoughts?
Oh, that's very,
I know, it's massive, massive.
It's massive. I think reality will ultimately do that for us, because there's only so long that you can deny reality. So there's been, you can take that in several ways. So there's been more and more studies again coming out saying that, you know, the happiest women are the housewives, and long work hours are bad for women's health and things like that. And I think you can even see maybe a little bit of a movement of, you know, the current, you know, the millennial generation, no matter how like paused it could seem at the moment. But there's a bit more, I think, of a movement towards more traditional, at least hobby wise. Like there's more people like engaging in traditional hobbies. There's more people maybe looking at traditional lifestyles. I think there's a little bit more of that, you know, slowly, slowly. I think reality will catch up on women and men, in our societies. I just, you know, just have to hope that it's not too late, not before we're like overwhelmed by the brown hordes, the invasion of Europe. I mean, that I'm sure has helped to red pill a lot of people and a lot of women. You know, I mean, there's only so many news reports you can hear about rapes and things like that before you kind of like, you wonder, you know, I could be next if I don't cancel this holiday I have to Germany. You know, I could go there and be raped, you know. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So I think there's I think only the most rabid, most brainwashed feminists are not seeing that at the moment, especially in Europe. So I think there will be I'm optimistic. I think there will be a slow shift towards something a bit more traditional, a bit more folkish, in society, just because that's how reality is, and you know, you can't fight against it very long before it kind of bites you back. So
that's true. I think also feminists are just becoming a laughing stock. They're just becoming a joke. A lot of people aren't taking them seriously anymore. They're not the ones setting the trends anymore. They're not the ones who are on the edge, you know. Everything they say and do is just retarded. So now it's more of, I see the trend changing where it's going to be a lot more, you know, kind of classy, wholesome women that are, you know, that are nationalists, that want to have families. Yeah. And women follow other women, so it's just about setting new trends, unfortunately. Yeah. But trends always go back and forth, right? It's always going left and right, left and right. And I'm always wondering, how do we stop making it go to the left and just keep it on the right for a long time, you know?
Well, yeah. I think there's also some evidence to say that children inherit the political views of their parents. To an extent. I mean, there'll always be exceptions to that rule. You know, you'll have the leftist boomer parents and their 1488 children and things like that. But in general, there'll be a sort of genetically and culturally and sort of from nurture, you will mainly have people take on the political views of their parents. And you know, as we well know, you know, liberals, leftists, they don't have children, or they have like one, you know, in their 40s.
Yeah.
So they're not going to turn up. Like they won't be, you know, leftists in a couple of generations.
That's right.
You know,
it's all demographics, isn't it?
Yeah.
So basically, and that, I always say that too. If the lefty chicks aren't breeding, that's actually a good thing, because then women like us can, you know, make up for that, and then it will be our children really that inherit the future, and they'll be much more hardcore than ever before, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they like is it one of the few groups in America that have reproduction rates above replacement? Are like, you know, evangelical Christians and Mormons and you know, the white people like that. So they'll, you know, so that their children will be the ones that inherit the future. And
we just need to uncuck them, and then it will be better. Because a lot of these Mormons, unfortunately, you know, for some reason, they always do these news stories when this family adopts like 10 black kids. You know, it always makes the news, and they push it like it's so amazing. And it's a lot of Christian families that are doing that, unfortunately. Somehow they're just, I don't know, their pastors are telling them to do it. And then they interview them and ask, why did you adopt so many, you know, kids, all these different ethnicities? God told me to do it. I'm like, are you sure it was God, or maybe it was some subliminal programming telling you that?
Yeah, that whole evangelical cuckery thing, where you literally like cause massive distress to your children by adopting 10 dindus. I mean, it seems, you know, completely and utterly bizarre to me. I mean, I guess there's sort of like an explanation you could go into the whole Christianity as kind of like a universalist Jew religion sort of thing. That could be the cause of that. You know, that could amplify like white people's empathy and the whole pathological altruism question. But yeah, that those sort of explanations. But yeah, I think these people, thankfully, I think, are quite rare, and I guess they're just like people who get massive dopamine hits from like the over the top virtue signaling.
So. I think afterwards they have buyer's remorse, though. You look at some of these guys that are paying for all this now, and they just look like they're just a fish under, you know, just fish out of water, just so confused and dazed.
Yeah.
What did I do? You know, because usually it's the woman that's pushing it, right? It's not men that are saying, let's go adopt 10 African kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? And then when the Tyrones and Jamals are there, you know, causing trouble at school and not doing as well as their, you know, natural children, and, you know, maybe even like beating up on the other kids, you know, they do live to regret it. It's just terrible for the natural children, I think.
I know, I feel sorry for them. I see them, I'm like, oh, poor thing. You know, I would be pissed if I was little and my parents adopted, you know, 10 kids. I remember there was a time when my parents were thinking of adopting somebody who was like a distant relative, right? And she was in Kazakhstan, but she was a little mixed, a little Asian. And I remember just like seeing the picture and thinking, no, you know, I had this jealousy and this rage about it, and then ended up not happening.
Yeah, like so. I could hardly cope with like my siblings being born, like, so someone, you know, I was that jealous. So, having like a random kid coming into the home would have been like, yeah, terrible.
All right, switching gears. Well, you and I both know this isn't true, but there's some rumors spreading. The alt-right's been infiltrated by, you know, a bunch of homos and woman haters. I hear this all the time, coming from a certain sector, you know, that just agitates all the time. And of course, there's also certain mainstream press, and then this other faction that's among us just being very divisive, likes to point to mainstream articles and say, see, you know, like Milo's the spokesman of the alt-right because the lamestream press said so, even though he isn't. So what do you think about all this, you know, homos and woman haters in the alt-right?
Well, I can say that I've never experienced anything that I would consider to be like woman hate. You know, you get the thirsty beta neets, you know, of the internet, like being marry me, Kathy, you know, things like that, you know. But but like overall, I've only ever, you know, had the nicest all the guys I've ever interacted with have always been, you know, more than kind and more than nice and more than accepting of like me as a woman being a bit more outspoken and a bit more sort of active in the alt-right. So I've never ever had any issues. There's a couple of maybe edgy neets on the TRS forums or things like that saying, oh, women should be like in burqas or whatever. But yeah, nothing that I would never think that there's like women haters or anything like that.
Neither have I. I've experienced the complete opposite. It's been guys that have been very kind. You know, I've met quite a few people being out at different conferences and stuff, and it's always been very cool. They've always been very gentlemanly. So that's just lies that are starting around. And I don't appreciate this. I always like to kind of defend some of those guys because they're actually good guys. And the mainstream press just loves to say, see, they just think women should be in the kitchen all day. You know, it's just like that's all we should be doing, just chained in the kitchen all day. It's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I know, because like the mainstream press and like, you know, the feminists and people like that will think that, you know, if women want to be traditional, it's because they've been brainwashed and beaten up by their, you know, oppressive fathers and oppressive husbands or whatever. You know, they couldn't possibly want to work in the home and be and raise a family. You know, that has to be because they've been brainwashed. So
I went to an alt-right conference, and that's when Roosh showed up too, and that's when a lot of these other rumors started. See, it's proof, it's evidence. They all support Roosh. So I really hope Milo doesn't show up at an alt-right conference this year, because looking forward to seeing what will happen if he does.
Yeah. Jeez.
What do you think about Milo?
Oh, I mean, I see the benefits that he brings. Like he's sort of like a stepping stone towards the red pilling for, I think, quite a lot of normies, because he's like edgy, but it's kind of like, it's okay to like him because he's gay.
Oh, I know. So, it drives me nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it kind of helps, you know, people to ease into some of the ideas. And then, you know, I think quite a few of them having been like eased into things like anti-feminism and things like that will then be more susceptible to some of the more sort of edgier things. So I think he has a place. I mean, I'm not, you know, so some of the stuff he does is a bit like, it is degenerate, but like, I mean, we don't have to we can use him, you know. He's not a, like the leader of the alt-right or whatever whatever the Jews try to put him across as, you know. But I think he's useful in many ways, and as long as we use him and he doesn't use us, I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, that's always the annoying thing. There is, I noticed that there's quite a few Jews that are kind of emerging in this kind of new right media that are cultural libertarians, and they're kind of like trying to be the opposition to the left now. You know, you've got Breitbart and Rebel and all these other factions, Stephen Molyneux, but a lot of them are Jewish. Did you know that?
Yeah. I knew about Steph. I knew he's got like he's got some echo in him and a few others. Yeah, it's hard to know like how much damage they'll do and how like the cost and benefit analysis to having these people. I think it hasn't yet been done. You know, it might be that they're like genuine. I think Stefan, he's I mean, I first came across him like a few years ago now when I was a basic bitch libertarian, and you know, he was all about the anarchy and I holding a gun to my head, you know, that sort of thing. And he's definitely come far from that. You know, I think he's genuinely into the race realism stuff. I think he's genuinely into some of the edgier stuff now. I think he's kind of life and reality that's kind of red pilled him.
And yeah,
I think
we had him on the show years ago. Actually, Henrik had him on the show before anything, and yeah, he does say some good things. I just can't stand huge egos and arrogance. It just really turns me off, and it just is just like all over that guy and Milo. You know, I just can't stand it. I just can't listen to it. And then it's funny with Stephen Molyneux, he always talks about Jews are just really super duper smart, you know, so there's no big Jewish conspiracy. And it's like, you almost want to play him some of the Holocaust survivor stories and some of the stories that they claim happened during the Holocaust and say, okay, if you're super duper smart, you know, explain some of these things, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think I mean, I admire him in the sense that he does seem to be like intellectually honest. So like, you know, he does seem to take facts and then form his conclusions after the facts rather than the other way around. But I think, you know, because of his heritage, there might be one thing one barrier that he can't cross, and it might be the JQ. But but he has called out like Jews that are open borders for Europe and not for Israel. So yeah, he has called out people like that. So
that's good.
Yeah.
So where do you think the alt-right is heading? Everyone always says it's just a big tent, right? So anything can kind of go under there. And there's pros and then there's some cons with that. But where do you think it's heading? Is it emerging into something else? Or, I mean, this is clearly just kind of a pit stop.
Yeah, well, I think because it's a movement of nationalists, it will be different in different nations. I mean, I think, you know, in America, it's definitely... We'll see what happens with the Trump presidency, because that seems to be like the main kind of alt-right campaign at the moment is that, and if Trump gets elected, I think there will be more and more it'll go from strength to strength. It might go from strength to strength. Sorry, regardless, because of like the changing demographic trends and the inevitable increase in like white racial consciousness. In Europe as well, I mean, you will different nationalist movements, whether they consider themselves alt-right or not, but it's basically that they will have to with the increasing immigration and in the invasion of Europe, they will have more and more of a sway, I think, in political life. You had the Austrian presidential elections, and you had the utter appalling voting fraud there going on, and you'll have it'll be interesting to see what happens with the French elections again, whether they'll be able to stump Le Pen again. But I think eventually, like it will keep rising. I think I'm optimistic on this.
That's right. It's true. You know, I always think the term it's generic, but it just applies for America when people say white nationalism. I'm like, in Europe, it used to be they're all white. They were just nationalists. You didn't have to say white nationalists. You know, so I crack up when people say Henrik's a white nationalist. No, he's a Swedish nationalist. He's from Sweden. You know what I mean? It's just funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being European, like, and being a nationalist, I completely understand, like, the importance of ethnic nationalism of different countries. But I do take the view that the other, like maybe like Richard Spencer does, like the other, they see all of us white people as, you know, as one.
That's right.
And so they, you know, they, I think in Europe we do have to show solidarity, and we do have to show unity as a race, you know, as a European race. We should put aside our quarrels and just combat this much greater threat that's you know, existential for us at the moment. So
that's right. We've got big fish to fry, so we gotta put aside some of these pesky differences and team up here.
Yeah.
I think too, in America, you just have a generic white because a lot of people just don't even know where they're from anymore, you know, so you just have to be comfortable with that term. But I see different parties emerging out of alt-right. I think I'll see some interesting things coming out of there. So I think it's good, and we should encourage a lot of people to come under that tent, and then it will shuffle out and sort out as it will, you know?
Yeah.
So last question for you. I wanted to ask your journey into, how should I say, I guess paganism or, you know, pre-Christian spirituality?
Yeah. Paganism. I mean, if you want to be precise, it's Romuva is the Lithuanian old Baltic pagan religion that people tend to subscribe to back home. But it's kind of paralleled my initial journey into nationalism. So I was raised Catholic. You know, attended church, had my first communion, things like that, and then I kind of broke away from that in my early teenage years, and I was looking for other things. You know, I explored different faiths and different spiritualities. So sort of like always kind of like on the pagan side of it. You know, I looked into things like Wiccanism and things like that, but you know, none of that really ever kind of attracted me until I found like the traditional Baltic faith, and from then on, I mean, I was quite active, even, you know, I would you know, go be, I was part of the community. I'm kind of still am, you know, whenever I can, you know, whenever I go back, I go to the, whatever celebrations that they're holding and whatever rituals that they're doing. Yeah, so I've just been part of that ever since, really, doing what I can, you know, to kind of keep the faith alive.
Midsummer's coming up, right? Yeah, I know the Baltic countries are pretty good. There's a lot of real pagan pockets. They still celebrate a lot of those pre-Christian seasonal traditions, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Midsummer is a bank holiday in Lithuania.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's a very important holiday for us.
I noticed one thing. You know, some of the alt-right gang might say, some of these younger guys will say, well, you're LARPing, you know. I hear people always like say, well, Lona, why are you pagan? You know, you're LARPing. It's like, actually, no, it's following the natural earth cycles and honoring ancestors is as grounded as it gets, right?
Exactly.
Following some made-up guy in the sky, that's kind of LARPing.
Yeah, for Makaiko on a stick. No, I mean, I have deep respect for genuine sort of Christians, especially Catholics, I think, and Orthodox. I think
a lot of pagan elements there too, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like European, you know, old white Christianity, I think, because it was Christianity that was taken and adapted to suit the local ways of life, you know, the local celebrations, the local rituals, the local you know, all the gods were just renamed to saints, basically, and things like that. But yeah, I think there's you know, there's like a little bit maybe of a conflict between the Christians and the pagans. And
I wish there wasn't. You know, I'm cool with whatever people want to believe in. That's their business. But we just have to respect each other and be cool about it. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's it's more important really to like to have that sense of spirituality and to have that sense of the greater you know, something greater beyond us, and to have that sense of like especially connection to your ancestors. And as long as people have that, however it manifests, I think is fine and is you know completely compatible with the nationalist outlook.
I think ritual is good too, though, because for me anyway, it forces me, like, I know Midsummer's coming up or there's other holidays, it forces me to kind of slow down, remember where I am in the season, what's going on around me, honor people in my line, you know, because we can get so busy. And so there really is something powerful about coming together with your folk and kind of meditating on your people and your goals and your purpose and your past. I mean, it's a very powerful thing, you know, chanting on the runes around the fire. It's very primal, very ancient.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, the sort of feeling you get when you're part of the circle, I think, is just so... I can't really describe it. It's the sense of euphoria and that sense of belonging and the sense of rootedness. I think it's so healing, and I think it's so important for people to be able to feel that, you know, however you do it, whether it's in a church or whether it's you know, around a fire, it's just vital, I think, to everybody's life, and people who don't experience that, I think they're much the poorer for it.
Yeah, and we have to have that release too, especially us when we're monitoring all these icky things all the time. For me, it is a positive thing to be able to just go put my feet in the dirt and just kind of meditate and just let it out, you know. Otherwise, you can just implode, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things I miss the most, you know, living out here in a foreign country is you know that feeling of belonging and the feeling of rootedness and being able to be one with nature, because. You know, it's, you know, over here, you, you know, you can find some nature. You know, there is nature in the UK. I mean, you can find nature. You can go and feel a bit of a connection, but it's not the same. I mean, especially especially in Europe, where you're so, if you are like a pagan and a nationalist, you're just so tied to your own community and to your own people. You know, it's really hard to be away from it. But you know, whenever I go back, it's like I'm renewed, like I'm refreshed. You know, it's like my home, like the earth itself is kind of speaking to me in a way.
It's powerful. I think our ancestors never meant for us to live in these huge cities like that. I would see it more healthier of like a lot of smaller fragmented communities that sometimes come together for events. But I think it's just, it's a clusterfuck, you know, in the city of just like all this bad stuff that happens when you get that many people in a close area together. I don't think we ever meant to live that way. I also think when it comes to England, I think overpopulation is a true concern. Environmentalism is a true concern. Yeah. And I'd like to see, my husband and I talk about this all the time, like a rewilding movement that you hear about. But I always say, bring back the oaks. Let's knock down a lot of these like Soviet bloc government buildings and these refugee asylum centers. And let's plant trees there again and bring back the forest.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the left have really hijacked the whole concept of environmentalism, but I think it's absolutely a nationalist thing. It's, you know, you want to keep your land beautiful, you want to protect it, you want to have it, you know, to keep it safe from contamination, and you know you want to be able to take pride in your surroundings. So yeah, I think it's really important, and just having like being able to like even living in a city, because like Vilnius is where I lived most of my life. You know, it's a really green city. I mean, despite like the Soviet buildings and things like that, like there's a lot of parks and a lot of trees and a lot of, so like you can, if you go like on one of the hills and you just look across, you know, there are buildings, but there's so much greenery as well in the summer. There's so many trees and things like that. You know, it's just better that way. And over here, for whatever reason, you know, that the cities really are just paved over. You know, there's very little, especially like in the city center, there's very little green. In city centers, there's very little greenery. Whereas, like, you know, in my experience, you know, there's this parks and there's greenery in the city itself. So,
I forgot to ask you one more thing when we were talking about pre-Christian societies. You know, a lot of people try and say, well, patriarchy is very much a Christian thing. It wasn't like that before. You know, what do you think? What was the balance like of men and women in our societies before Christianity or patriarchy?
I think that, you know, there are natural gender roles that people fit into as a rule, you know, and I think that reality has always been with us. And it has always been reflected in this sort of pre-Christian society. So, you know, you had like men as the warriors, men as the raiders, men as, you know, the protectors, and you had women in their particular roles. You could say that there would have been like some exceptions, and you could point to the archaeological findings of women buried with weapons and things like that. But I think that would have been like a rarity, you know, an exception rather than the rule. So, I think they just followed the natural rhythms of life.
Just biology. They probably didn't even have a word for it. They didn't even need a word like patriarchy, because it was just like common sense, right? They just fall into their biological role.
Exactly. And they would never think that a certain role is less than something else. You know, it's whatever you as a person, you know, fit into is what is suited for you. You know, if you're a man, you know, you have certain roles and obligations because of your biology, and as a woman, you have certain roles and obligations as part of your biology, and that's just the way it is and the way it should be. So.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're a new mom, so thanks for making time for us.
And
I hope the little one, he's right there, right? See?
He's been taken into another one. But no, yeah, it was my pleasure. It's been really nice talking to you, and I'm a great fan of your show.
So. All right, we'll have to do it again sometime, okay?
Yeah, we will do. Okay, cool.
All right, on the gay thing. There's a certain blabbermouth who's been accusing every single guy in the alt-right of being a homo, which, of course, is gossip and nonsense. My thoughts. Sexual deviants have always existed in society, but they were relegated to the dark corners. But today, they're a central focus in society, propped up as being even better than those boring straight relationships. This, of course, is destructive and genocidal. I know of just a couple gay nationalists, and they don't push the gay lifestyle or even talk about their sexuality. In fact, they prop up the family unit as natural and healthy. However, gays like Milo, who are flaming, flamboyant, talk about their sexual adventures, are full of ego, try hard to be shocking, is not something I support. In his swag store, he actually sold a t-shirt that said BBC with a picture of a black rooster on it worn by a blonde white girl. The BBC stood for Big Black Cock. Really. Although he says some common sense things, his drive that I know of isn't about creating European ethnostates or keeping white countries white. I think there's a trend of former libs switching over to more alt-right-esque topics simply because it's shocking and it has shock value. It gets attention. And we know Jews love to play persecuted underdogs. And anyone who says the alt-right doesn't touch the JQ isn't part of the real alt-right. The Jewish memes going around aren't just jokes without anything behind them. There's so much more I want to say on this, but I'll leave it at this for now. At the end of the day, I don't know Milo, but for me, I just don't take him seriously. In fact, that flaming, arrogant attitude just turns me off altogether. I don't care if it's put on or if others like him, it's just not for me. Find me on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook, and consider signing up for a Red Ice membership to get full access to all our content. During our live stream video show, we save the best for our Red Ice family. Visit redicemembers.com to sign up. Talk soon.